Oh, so this week and next week is going to be the third Jesus, like David said, part one today. And I was going to do something else next week, and I realized there is so much wonderful stuff in this book. I couldn't even begin to capture it in one Sunday. We actually did a book study on this back in 2009, right after it came out. I came across it and I was like, oh my gosh, we've got to read this book. So we got copies, and it's The Third Jesus by Deepak Chopra. It's still available, of course, but I love The Third Jesus, and the subtitle is The Christ We Cannot Ignore. So that's what I'm going to be talking about. And I had a whole section already copied off and listed that I was going to speak on this morning, and I'd been praying and meditating, and I got up early and did that again, and Spirit had me toss. You know that happens for me. And so instead of key words, we're going to be doing nine essentials of a spiritual life. It was so clear. I'm like, okay, let me type it. And then I had enough time that I was able to do a handout. Because I know when I'm doing some of these talks, people are trying to write down things. So you can just relax and take this home. And I'll do one for you next week from the third Jesus as well. And it's got a quote on it, and then the nine pieces I'll be talking about. And so this book is one that is so in alignment with unity. It is absolutely in alignment, just like How Christianity Must Change or Die, that came out, that's Bishop Shelby Spong. That came out a number of years ago. In fact, I was still in Texas and came up to Oregon for the Unity Conference. And he was speaking, and he said, I love unity. Unity's gone back and captured the message of the man Jesus and the Christ teachings rather than what the church has set up as traditional theology and dogma. And so this book is absolutely unity, and he loves unity, by the way, Deepak Chopra. I got to meet him years ago. He came to Unity Dallas when I was on staff as a ministerial assistant before I went to Unity Village. And he had flown, and they had gotten delayed flights, and so he had gone without sleep for, at that point, it was like 30 hours. And they said, but he and it, they just landed at the airport, he's coming. And so Don Curtis spoke for a little while, and I was out in the lobby waiting to greet him. He comes in, and talk about a lit soul. And I thought, this man is amazing, because he said, it's been over 30 hours since I've slept, I think going on 34 hours. He said, but I meditated all the way over in the ride. And here I am. And he did an all-day workshop. Just amazing. And so it was so neat to get to see him very early on. This had to have been, 35 years ago when he was first starting on the circuit. And so this book, he talks about the third Jesus. You want to know what the three are? It's a good place to start. The first one is the historical Jesus, the man who actually lived, who taught, who was a spiritual master, a rabbi. It was the historical character that we have stories and glimpses of all through the Gospels. And what's interesting is those pictures, I once heard it described, they're not photographs of Jesus, they're portraits. You know how a portrait captures the essence of a person, but not the black and white? That's what the scriptures are meant to show us, the essence of that person. And when we try and make it black and white, we limit it and we freeze it in time. Because a photograph captures one moment of time. A portrait captures a soul essence that can shift and change. When I was in Scotland on Iona, when I led the group where we had one of our retreats on Iona, a wonderful woman came and spoke to us who does iconography. She makes beautiful icons. And she studied for years to do it in the tradition with all of the layers and all the prayers and all the gold. And she said the way to encounter an icon is not to just look at it. She said, connect with the icon and look at a soul level, and then you will realize the icon is looking back at you. And she's absolutely right. That's a portrait rather than a photograph. It communes with you right where you are. And so the first Jesus is the historical man. The second is Jesus, the Son of God. This is the institutional element where a church has taken and created dogma and a priesthood and a worldwide religious movement that is institutionalized. Jesus, the Son of God, the only one. And I know growing up in Texas, that's what I always heard. And when I would pray or connect with the man Jesus and the essence of who he was, I just felt love and acceptance and compassion and peace. I didn't feel judgment. I didn't feel like I was some terrible sinner. I felt like I was being seen and loved. As my mother would say, I love you warts and all. Just as I was. And so I always had a difficult time with this institutionalized figure that you must do it my way or else. You'll burn in everlasting hell, you may be trapped in purgatory, all of those things. And that seems so out of alignment with the stories and the portrait of the soul that I would meet when I would commune with the man Jesus and with his human essence and his spiritual essence. I've had a number of people, in fact, I've had a group that came and met with me in my office back there a number of years ago that are very fundamentalist, and they said, how can you call yourself a Christian? And I said, well, number one, I follow the life of the Christ. And they said, well, what about Jesus dying on the cross? Do you believe that you are redeemed and saved by the death and blood and suffering of Jesus on the cross? And I always say, no, but I am saved and redeemed by the living example of Jesus's life. The death was one moment. It's his life that inspires me. And through his death, he reminds me that we're all eternal spiritual beings, growing and evolving over time. And so the second one is the one that most of us grew up with. Third is the cosmic Christ. That's what Unity has always focused on. It's a spiritual guide who embraces all of humanity. And when you look at the portraits of the man Jesus, that's what he did. He was radically inclusionary of all people. In fact, intentionally would make a point of connecting with and blessing the outcasts, those who were not in particularly the inner Jewish circle. He expanded out, and his message was one of love for all people. And so that cosmic Christ is the part that I've always connected with, along with the portrait of the man that I would find when I would read scriptures or hear stories from the Bible. This is what Deepak Chopra says. Christianity needs to overcome its tendency to be exclusionary and refocus on being a religion of personal insight and spiritual growth. In this way, Jesus can be seen for the universal teacher he truly is, someone whose teachings of compassion, tolerance, and understanding can embrace and be embraced by us all. This is what Here I've explained as the church of amor versus the church of Roma, the church of love versus the dogmatic outer form of the church. When I was in ministerial school, I've talked about Ed Rabel, who was in his 80s, that was one of my instructors that I just adored. He was just an amazing man. And Ed Rabel, when we were there, in fact, it was one of the first times I was at Unity Village and took a class from him. And at one point, I still remember exactly which auditorium I was in. I remember sitting in the chair and being blown away by something he said. He said, "You all are the congregation of the second coming." I was like, whoa, I get goosebumps even saying it. You all are the second coming. The second coming was never meant to be Jesus returning on a cloud in a particular place. The second coming was what he tried to remind us all, that we're all divine beings. And he was saying, let your light shine. You are the second coming of the Christ energy, when you realize that you are a channel for this, even as I was blessed to be a channel for this. And through his example, I can understand more how to do it when things come up in life. And of course, as you all know, that path of amor has blessed me with embracing and experiencing Mary Magdalene, who was his companion. And through her, I've come into a whole new loving relationship with the man Jesus, because he experienced life at every level and embraced Father, Mother, God in all of its forms. Don Curtis in The Way of the Christ, there's a quote I shared with you last week on Easter Sunday that fits perfectly with this. We are all disciples whether we know it or not. The spiritual path eternally beckons us. Those who follow the upward path make a conscious choice to follow the Christ light. What the Master called the way, the truth, and the life. Our song this morning. It's not follow the Jesus light, it's follow the Christ light. When I found Unity, they said Jesus is the man who experienced an earthly embodiment. The Christ is that divine spark that filled him and energized him and allowed him to be a vessel to share what that divine presence is like. So the outer embodiment is the man Jesus. That inner spirit is the Christ light that is in everyone. It's called by many different things, the Buddha, the Atman, there are many. The Quakers call it the inner light. I love that. And that it is in everyone. And that it's up to us to let the light shine. He told us, you are the light of the world. You. A lot of times I go, are you sure, me? No, no, over here. No, each and every one of us. And he says, don't hide your light. Don't put it under a bushel barrel where you can't be seen. Have the courage to show your light, because you are that divine presence. And that's what we're all meant to be. It's not about one person. It's about that one person who reminded us who and what we truly are. Held up a mirror to realize we are divine creations. What an incredible gift. Instead of thinking that wisdom is unique to the Messiah, we should take Jesus literally when he says, you are the light of the world. Jesus is describing our destiny as equal to his own. God consciousness is offering to open a path for us. And then he goes into these nine elements of a spiritual life. And you'll see that they flow together, but they're about the inner work. All of these are about the inner work of that spiritual life, so that then when you step into the world, you can be a clearer embodiment of it than ever before, and you can see it embodied in others and in your life experiences. I gave you the list, so you'll have the nine to take home. The first is meditation, and that is going within. No agenda, simply breathing in the presence of the divine. It's where we always start when we go into meditation and prayer together. That light exists within everyone, and when we go inside ourselves, we encounter the light and the divine at the same moment. And so it is always and ever with us. So to meditate is simply to shift focus from out there to in here and that presence. Contemplation is the next one. There are many people who walk the contemplative path, and the contemplative, to contemplate things even in your lives, is to take things and really reflect upon it. It's like taking a crystal and turning so you see the different angles and prisms and light as you turn things around. Contemplation is not just looking at the surface of something. It's asking it to reveal deeper layers, to reveal the light in itself, to realize that everything truly in essence is made of light, however dense it may appear. And to contemplate lets you do that mental process. Isn't it great that we have a way to take that mental process, which is not going to turn off, and shift it into something that focuses on truth? The third is revelation. I love that. When something new is revealed, it's aha moments. I loved it when I was a teacher of the deaf. One of the signs is the sign to understand. It's to have an aha moment, and it's this. It's the light bulb going off in your head. That is revelation. Oh my gosh, I didn't realize that's what that meant. And look how that woven. Without that, I wouldn't be here. Moments of revelation. They can come out in nature. I love finding them in nature. That's an easy place for me to find them. You can do it in inner work. You can do it just opening to see it all around you. It can be in the book that falls off the shelves into your hand, and you open it to just the right passage you needed to read. It's the song that comes on the radio, and something triggers, and you realize something anew. Revelation. Some people in the traditional church believe that revelation from Jesus stopped when he died. I can't even imagine that. If the whole message is about eternal life in spirit, of course revelations are continuing to be revealed for us individually and for us collectively. We all know we're living in a time of tremendous collective change and revelations. Number four is prayer. And that is simply asking for higher guidance. I see prayer as a conversation with God. It's like talking to my best friend. And in that, he says that prayer, simply put, is simply the way the light asks to see itself. Isn't that wonderful? Prayer is the light asking to see itself. It's me going, right now, I don't know what to do. I'm dealing with this. I'm trying to be brave. I'm trying to be faithful. And in that conversation comes an acceptance and a love that lets me be the light I am at this moment, whether I'm hidden, showing brightly, or somewhere in between, and that divine presence is there to commune with. It's conversation, it's connection. Number five is grace. Grace is taking God into one's heart, he says. Grace for me is simply at a level of heart knowledge, which is even higher than head knowledge, because it blends everything, true heart knowledge. And that heart knowledge lets us see God's presence all the time, even if it's a tiny little spark of light in the midst of a challenge. Grace is given freely. You don't have to earn it. You don't have to do everything just right, and then maybe if you're lucky, you'll get the golden ticket that says grace. Grace is there flowing in that divine presence that is ever with you. It's pure love in every moment. And then love, participating in divine love. It's where we get to be the living connection for ourselves and others to that divine presence that is love. It's small random acts of kindness that we do. It's big moments of love that we celebrate. And all of those, love is the greatest spiritual path of all. The greatest commandment is that we love, and God is love. And so it's a willingness to participate and to be that presence of love, starting at the very center of ourselves. Love is living connection with the divine that brings joy and peace, creativity, communion, that we then, the chalice of our heart, can open and overflow from us to the world. We're living in a time where the high heart has evolved. People who do chakra work, there is a high heart that has evolved in our time that we are all awakening, that is that higher spiritual church of a more energy coming in through and as us. The seventh one is faith. He says, when you stop believing in the illusion of the material world and see everything for what it is, light, you have faith. Faith is knowing that you live and move and have your being in this divine presence, and that through faith, that light and energy of the divine can take any shape or form if we have the faith and the love and the willingness to form it. So we shape our lives. And so by believing in that higher reality, it's being in the world, but not just of the world. Having that spiritual perspective is what gives us that sense of faith. The next word he uses is salvation, which for me, and I'm sure for many of you, can be a triggering word. As I shared at the beginning, salvation is being saved by simply realizing that as you move into the light, you become more and more Christed, you become more and more connected to divine energy, you become connected to a wisdom and a peace and a compassion that is endless, bottomless, eternal. You've come to your truest self as a spark of the divine. And so that is that salvation of realizing you are truly an eternal spiritual being having an earthly experience for a divine reason. And I love the last one, number nine. Unity. Ta-da! He was talking about the greater concept of unity, of course, but I love that that's the name of our movement. Oneness, becoming one with God, going beyond the outer appearance of boundaries into the presence of God where nothing stands between you and that divine source. Nothing. You are one with all of life. You're one with the divine. You're one with nature. You're one with all of your brothers and sisters all around the globe. You're one with the animals. You're one with the stars. We're all held in this beautiful oneness that began with, let there be light, chanted the world that which we abide and all of us into being. Isn't that a wonderful feeling? How could you possibly be a terrible sinner when you were chanted and called into being? You are the light of the world. Jesus did not ever intend to be the only one. None of his words, none of his teachings, none of his living examples and healings and miracles ever said, it's just me. It was always our Father that he prayed to, not my Father, our Father, all of us. I love what Deepak Chopra says here, and I'd like to close with this quote from him. When God consciousness dawns, a complex series of changes occurs. There is no longer a battle between good and evil. Fear is revealed as illusion. You identify with God. Your thoughts and desires have a divine source. You feel that the world is yours as a co-creator with God. The world out there responds immediately to the world in here. And love is realized as a supreme force in the universe. Let us pray. Oh, sweet spirit, abiding presence of the divine, truly in you we live and move and have our being. And we recognize that even as there were three Jesuses, historical, iconic, daily, and cosmic, so we too live our lives historically as the being that we are. We sometimes get closed in by cultural boundaries, even as Jesus did. But within us is that spark of the divine, the cosmic Christ, that like for him, so for us, we can open up to the power of divine presence, of wisdom and perception, of grace and hope, of peace and of love. God consciousness is always offering an open path for us to walk, and it is simply up to us to make a conscious decision to that eternally beckoning spiritual path and to say yes. And to look to the masters who have blessed us with living examples so that we too can become the way, the truth, and the life. For this we are so profoundly grateful, and we go forth renewed, restored, and rededicated to this path of living light, seeing it, feeling it, being infilled by it, and then allowing it to pour forth from the chalice of our hearts to one another and to our world. We are truly one with all, and love is our true spiritual calling. And so it is. Om, amen, and blessed be.